County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, for today's very, very special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Warwickshire County Cricket Club phenomenon, Sam Hain. So Sam, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Hello, how are we? Yeah, good, good. Well, I just said before we started recording, I'm going to be honest, I was on a rush back from Coventry, because we've been having some fielding sessions there just to get outside, I guess away from Edgbaston. But no, our day's been good. We're back at training after a week off half term. I've had a bit of a hit. Ryan Sidebottom hit me in the head today, so it's all good to be back, which was an interesting one. But no, we're back in gearing up for the season ahead. So as I say, I'm happy to be on. It's probably been a long time coming. So I'm happy for I guess for the next hour and a half to have a little bit of chat about all things cricket, all things Bears. Looking forward to the season ahead. Obviously the season just gone, so I'm happy to be on.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic to hear, to be honest, Sam. And yeah, completely echo that sentiment. It has been far too long, to be honest, but there was a reason for that. For long-term listeners of the podcast, as you'll know, I am the resident Warwickshire fan here at the podcast. If it was up to me, we would have pretty much the entirety of that Bears squad. But because we do cover all 18 counties here,
of course.
At TCCP, we have to, you know, offer a little bit of balance. We can't just become the Warwickshire County Cricket Podcast. But today, warning for the listeners out there who aren't Bears fans, today might be a little bit biased from the Cricket Connoisseur. So those are just your words of advance warning before we get into today's conversation. And in terms of the chat itself, basically today, myself and Sam are going to be chatting about his earliest cricketing memories. Then a large chunk of the conversation will, of course, surround the mighty Warwickshire County Cricket Club. And then we'll end today's podcast with a mountain of Twitter questions. In fact, yeah, it's the most Twitter questions we have ever had on the County Cricket
Club. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or bad thing, but I'm going to assume it's a good thing. But we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. Depends what questions they've asked.
I'm going to be honest, Sam, there's a little bit of a mix, in particular from your teammates at Edgbaston. But
yeah, that's a shambles. I've already read what Rhodesy and Ollie and a few others have sort of asked. So hey, there's always a few, but we'll get to that when we do. But as I say, look forward to them.
Top man. And as you said, yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But Sam, before we get into all of that good stuff then, and of course those Twitter questions towards the latter stages of today's recording, I just want to transport you all the way back to the origin of your cricketing journey, if I may. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this magnificent game?
Wowzers. For those who don't know me, I grew up in Australia. My parents were English born, and then immigrated to Oz in 1998. And that's where I sort of grew up. I grew up playing all sports. I'm one of three. I've got two brothers. And I guess being outdoors and having the childhood, I was quite lucky in terms of, you know, my education. I went to a nice school, and I had opportunities that, you know, I look back now, I'm obviously very grateful for. So I try to dive in into all sports, and it wasn't really until I was, you know, 13, 14, really, that when I went to Loreto, funny enough, that I guess my love for cricket grew and it was ignited. Because up until that point, I was just playing cricket, you know, just for the fun of it. So I guess up until that point, again, as I said, I was playing all sports, and it wasn't really till
I guess I graduated in 2012 and then moved over here to 2013. Then it really hit me that, you know, this game that was a hobby, I guess it turns into a job. And here we are, I guess, 8-9 years later, still here, still cracking on. And I guess you got to pinch yourself sometimes, from where you come from and to where you are now. It's quite funny and it's quite fun to have, in terms of, I look at where, when I grew up to, if you told me I'd be in Birmingham for, you know, down the line, I would have laughed. So it's funny how it all sort of pans out. But again, I guess my upbringing was all sports. And it wasn't really till my latter stages that cricket was something that I really looked at and say, oh, there's a career here. So, as I say, I'm not sure if I answered your question there, but it's funny how it sort of pans out, a bit of a snowball effect, to be honest with you. And like, I just look at it like, I grew up playing in the backyard, dad at the nets. And then it wasn't really till Loretto in 2009, 2010 that it sort of grew from there.
So pretty much a late bloomer then, in terms of the cricketing journey.
I'd say so. Again, you know, I was 14 when I went to Loretto, and even then I was a bit naive. Like, you know, I was playing cricket for the fun of it. Even then, you know, I was trying to play all sports. But I suppose I am a late bloomer in the sense that I was probably, yeah, when I moved over to England in 2013, that it really hit me that this is something that could be a career. Like, granted, you know, in age group cricket, I suppose I knew I was talented. I knew it was something that I loved. But I guess there's a difference between it's something that you loved, then it's potential career choice. I think there's, you know, it's slightly two different things. So, yeah, it really didn't hit me that when I first stepped foot in Birmingham, it actually hit me this is a potential career. So up until that point, you know, I was just playing because I loved it and I enjoyed it. You know, everything else is, I guess, a bonus.
Well, I suppose at that age as well, it is all about the enjoyment, isn't it? That's first and foremost. That should be front and center. It's about loving the game. That's what fuels your design, your passion for the game of cricket. You don't want to specialize too early. But it is interesting you mentioned Loretto, because this is an integral part of your cricketing journey. And actually, we had former Warwickshire captain Michael Powell on the podcast to discuss your journey and in terms of his first impressions of you, Sam. What were your first impressions of Loretto? And I suppose in terms of the UK as a country, because coming from Hong Kong, going over to Australia and then coming to Scotland, quite a big difference, in particular with the weather.
Yeah, well, I remember I rocked up in Birmingham in board shorts and flip-flops and it was freezing. I think it was snowing. So, you know, I was 14. I know that obviously there was a connection with Powley. I call him Powley now, but it was Mr. Powell back then. So, you know, there were a connection with Powley, and obviously because my dad's director of sport at the school I went to. And there was a family that immigrated, I think, from Scotland out to the Gold Coast where I grew up. And then it sort of went from there. I think, you know, Powley and my old man had, you know, chats back and forth. And then before you know it, I found myself on a plane, you know, to Loretto for what was effectively 7-8 weeks. And then, you know, at 14, I didn't really know my left hand from my right, to be honest with you. All I knew that cricket was something that, you know, I enjoyed doing. So, you know, I rocked up at Loretto. I remember I landed and I think like within the next day or that day, I was playing a game of cricket. And then it sort of grew from there, to be honest with you. Again, it was a bit of a snowball effect. I remember Powley sent me down to Birmingham for a week. Again, I was so naive at that age, as you are. But I didn't know, I didn't have a clue what was going on. Rocked up at Birmingham, trained down, played a game. I remember I was wearing Nakash Tahir's shirt, which was like three sizes too big for me. We played at Coventry North Warwick. I didn't get any runs or anything like that. Went back up, finished my term, then went back to Oz, and I just thought nothing of it. And then, you know, Dougie Brown and Gilo, who were in charge back then, you know, kept in contact. I found myself following year, came back, just played second team cricket. And then I will never forget, Dougie Brown sat me down at pretty much the same place I made that, played my debut at Cov, and said, mate, when you finish school, you know, we want to offer you a 2-year contract. So, and I remember vividly, I sat on that contract for ages, like, you know, because people got to realize I was in the Queensland system. So I still grew up playing in the 12s, 15s, 17s, 19s in the Queensland system. So that was where I learned, I guess, majority of my cricket. So eventually I thought, I'll sign it. I'll take the chance and I'll sign it. We'll see where we go. So graduated 2012 and 2013 and found myself here. Actually, Ollie Hannon Dolby and I signed our first year. So I remember him and I were brought to the club same year. And then ever since then, it's just, as I said before, a bit of a snowball effect. Eight, 9 years, we're still here. So I owe a lot to Paolo, to be fair, because I think, as I say, if it wasn't for him, you know, God knows where I'd be. So, you know, that man, I guess, gave me a chance. I look back now, but at the time, I didn't know, as I said, I didn't know what was going on. I was just playing cricket for the love of it. But, you know, I guess he saw something in me. And I think Warwickshire took a chance on me as well. So I guess I'll forever be trying to pay back that, whatever they saw. I'm just trying to pay back in I guess, in runs and hopefully, you know, many more trophies down the line.
Well, to be honest, Sam, it's funny you mentioned that. I was about to say, in terms of the gamble that Warwickshire took, one of the best gambles I think we've taken in recent years, to be honest. We'll talk about your distinguished career with the Bears in due course, but honestly, you've come a long way since that first year at Edgbaston. You really, really have.
Yeah, it's actually, I do have to pinch myself sometimes when I look back. Like, I was 17 when I moved over. You know, God knows, I signed originally a 2-year contract. 2013, I didn't really play much first team cricket. And then second, 2014, I came in, I think Belly or someone got injured. So a spot opened up. So I made my debut against Middlesex. And I managed to go right in that season. And then, you know, I thought, oh, this is sick. Like, how much, you know, I love cricket. We're scoring runs. Life's good. And then, you know, they offered me an extension. And I just sort of grew from there. But it's amazing, like, when I look back, you know, the I guess the chance I took at 17, you know, some people might have gone, no, I'm happy in Oz. But for me, all I wanted to do was just play, you know, cricket and get paid for it. Like, how good does that sound? Granted, there's obviously a challenge that go along with it. Obviously, leaving mum and dad, obviously the support network that I built over the years back at home in Oz. Granted, I had quite a few tough times growing up when I was over here by myself. But, you know, the lessons I've learned being over here by myself, having to fend for myself, cricket first being a love, but now a job, you know, all things that have taught me life lessons. So on and off the cricket, it's something that, you know, I do look back at occasionally, even though I try not to, and go, wowzers, like, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that, you know, you know, 8-9 years, whatever years down the line, Birmingham is now my home. You know, Warwickshire is a club that I love dearly. You know, they've given me a job, they've given me a career, and then this is my home now. So it's pretty cool looking back on. But of course, like, there's so much more I want to do in terms of, you know, my career and for Warwickshire. So it's all exciting.
Most certainly is. And yeah, we'll talk about 2021 in particular later on in the podcast. Oh my goodness, the 24th of September 2021. What a day. It does not get any better than that.
The best day in my life in terms of cricket. Like, I genuinely thought, you know, I remember Robbo saying, obviously we'll talk about it, I'm assuming, down the line, but I remember Robbo afterwards saying, you know, he played for 16 years and he'd never won the championship. And for that to happen the way it did, like, I don't like thinking about it, you know, too much, obviously, because we're approaching a new season. But like, I still look back and I go, that was single-handedly the best feeling I've ever had on a cricket field. And it's something that will stay with me for years and years and years. Like, it's just a shame it went by so quickly, and before you know it, we were getting ready for the Bob Wills final. But it was as special that it was in front of home fans on day four, final game. You can't write it. So, you know, it's one of them. It's so, so special. And I know you as a Bears fan, you share that just as much as me. You might be able to put it more better into words than what I ever could, but it was, a hell of a final game and a hell of a season, to be fair. Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty memorable. Yeah, we'll touch upon that, obviously, in a lot more detail as the podcast progresses. It's funny you mention about the day itself, Sam, actually. I'm not sure whether we should bring it up right now or might do it later, but in terms of at the end of that, we will get into the details in due course. But at the end of that day, the one thing that I'll always remember is yourself bringing the trophy over, because that is now my Instagram profile picture. So thank you for that. And by the way, do you want to know who it actually replaced? Have a guess. I'll give you a clue. 563 test wickets.
563 test wickets. I'm going to be honest, my cricket knowledge isn't great. 563 test wickets. Oh, what, for England? Who does he play for?
Not England. Australia.
Australia? 563 test wickets. Shane Warne? No. I haven't got a clue here. My knowledge is Dara. Tell me who.
Nicknamed after a bird.
Nicknamed after a bird. Big Bird. You're going to have to tell me here, because I honestly, I'm stumped. But all I'm happy about is that I replaced whoever it was.
Well, here is a story for the listeners. Sam, you replaced Glenn McGrath as my Instagram profile picture.
A pigeon's not a big bird.
I didn't say it was a big bird. I said he's nicknamed after a bird, not a big one.
I said a big bird. Right. So I replaced him, did I?
You did. And that is still there to this day. And that will remain there.
I haven't changed, have I?
No, it's still there. It'll be there for many, many more years to come as well. As I said, we'll get into...
Well, that's the thing. I remember, obviously, that you know, it was quite cool because... You know, that final day, as I said, you can't script anything like that. I don't think the way that day panned out will ever be recreated in terms of, you know, the whole of the county championship was just wearing that game, especially after Lancs, Hampshire, what happened there, knowing that we obviously had to win. And then, you know, as each day went, we thought, you know, there's a chance of it being a draw here. And then, the way Yatesy and Rhodesy battered that final session just bought us more time. And then final day, looking back now, like obviously it's all a bit of a blur, to be fair, because, you know, it's been a while. But again, I just know as each wicket grew, as each wicket got taken, you know, the belief grew and grew and grew. And then, you know, the crowd got a little bit more into it. I certainly got a bit more into it. And then when that final wicket happened, I'm sure there's been a few of the lads who have been on this. Like, I don't get many out of body experiences, but that was just one of them. Like, pure euphoria. It's just wish I could take it in a little bit more. But I guess that's professional sport. Like, there are so many lows that, you know, especially cricket. There's so many highs and lows. And I've seen my fair share of them, but. That is a high that I guess I'll never take for granted. It's something that hopefully we can recreate in the future. But to be able to spend that moment with a few of the fans who I guess you know, have been with us over the years, and to share that with them, like, as I say, it means as much as it does to them as it does to us. You know, they're much part of this Bears family. So that day, as you're probably aware, it gets me emotional still thinking about it. From time to time, because it's something I never thought was, I guess, on the horizon in terms of how soon it happened. Like, obviously, we've got a great bunch of lads around the same age. We're all pushing towards the same goal. But for it to happen the way it did last year, like, you know, it's pretty incredible. It was pretty sick. And it was something that I'll never, ever, ever, ever forget, ever. Same and the celebrations were just as good. I remember being out in, B81 in my pretty much my Bears cap, not wanting to take it off. Like, that's what it's all about, to be fair. I won't say much more than that, but it was certainly a great night. But to be fair, what a season. And it was quite nice to share just a few brief moments with, I guess, a few of the fans to, you know, share the trophy with, because you certainly, you can't take those moments for granted, because you're not sure when it will, ever happen again.
100%, Sam. Could not have articulated that much better myself. And actually, you know what? I'm going to throw the podcast script out of the window for the time being, because it is the elephant in the room. We have to talk about 2021, because it was a remarkable season. When you think of this great club, which has existed since 1882, I mentioned this to Craig Miles, actually, funny enough. So, Sam, I want to know your reaction as well. We have been in the Championship since 1895. We have now won it on 8 separate occasions. 1911, 1951, 1972, 94, 95, 2004, 2012, and 2021. How does it feel, Sam Hain, to be a part of just 80 or so Bears players in history to be a part of a county championship winning starting 11?
Obviously, goosebumps thinking about it. Again, like, you know, I arrived, Ollie and I arrived after, you know, the boys won it in 2012. And it took a few years knowing, 2013, you know, 2014, I think we came close. I think we came second in the champo. But everyone talked about 2012 and how hard it is to win a championship. You know, everyone kept talking about 2012 and the team of 2012. And obviously, myself being in the 4-day team, definitely seen my fair share of ups and downs. Obviously, we got relegated. You know, I went through some tough times in terms of, you know, Belly, Trotty, Jeeps, you know, certain lads retiring and then having to reestablish it, you know, a Warwickshire team that are able to compete. And obviously, Rosie, I remember Rosie having a chat about there's only so long we can, you know, talk about.
A rebuild.
Sort of a rebuild stage. Yeah, transitions. And then, again, we always thought it was on the horizon. Did we think it would happen last year? Absolutely not, if I'm being completely honest. We just thought if we can get to Division One, anything can happen. And so I remember getting to Division One, playing some really good cricket, and then it was just a shoot-off. And then to lose to Hampshire, we thought, wowzers, are our chances gone here? And then obviously to play the final game against Somerset, having to win the championship, to then win, I guess it's something that I'll never, ever take for granted. And I guess any lows I think we face as cricketers, they're just outmatched by the highs. And that was certainly something that I'll never, ever forget. You know, you talk about 8 times as a club, they've won the, you know, county championships, and to be a part of them is quite special. You know, no matter what happens now moving forward, you know, certain lads might move on, whatever, retire, that squad will forever be known as, you know, the 2021 county championship winners. And that's something that, you know, can't be taken away. So to be a part of that is certainly, you know, I'm sitting here smiling, thinking about it, because it's something that, you know, was a goal of mine. I had 2 goals. Well, I've got 3 goals. One was to get capped. One was to win the championship. And then obviously one's to play for England. So, you know, 2 out of 3 so far. And then hopefully, as I say, it's not the last trophy that this squad can do, because I feel like we're all, obviously all trucking in the right direction. But, you know, thinking back on it now, it's truly special. Truly, truly special. And even after the season done, you know, we looked around going, did we just win the championship? Like, lads couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? Because it was just something. We got a bit of a run, momentum, all those sort of words, you know, words and cliches. And, you know, to do it now, I think we've done it once. I think the challenge is, can we back it up? And, you know, can we build something here with the group of players we have? Because, as I say, I've been around since 2013. So I've definitely seen, you know, what this club can do and where it's been. So it's very exciting to be a part of. But I'm not sure if I'll answer your question there, to be fair. But looking back on last year, it was definitely special. I'll just say it was special. We'll leave it at that. I tend to ramble on with my answers, to be honest with you. But as I say, yeah, I can't put into words what last year meant to me as a cricketer, because it was something that I'll never ever forget, put it that way.
Sam, there's no need to apologise for your ramblings as well. You are in the presence of someone who loves a good cricket ramble as well. And
Exactly.
But I'll try and articulate it from a fan's perspective, because...
You tell me. I'd love to know what you think, because you'd be able to articulate better, much better than I ever could.
Well, it's an interesting one, because especially for me, I wasn't there for 2012. I watched that season religiously. We had it on, you know, in the classroom, at school, in our high school. We were watching and listening and constantly checking the BBC website. And that moment that we lifted it at New Road, and we absolutely hammered Worcestershire as well, our local rivals. We'll talk about that rivalry in due course as well, because we have to at some point, in particular, some of your performances over the years. But I wasn't there at the ground. And that's something which I'd always wanted to have experienced as a Warwickshire fan. Not only in 2021 did we have the opportunity, not only was it at Edgbaston, our spiritual home as fans of Warwickshire County Cricket Club, but it was also the way in which we won it. And I say we as though I was on the field. We weren't on the field, it was you guys on the field. But the way in which Somerset were 32 for one at lunch on day four, there were two sessions of the season left, not the game, the entire season. Nine wickets to take, otherwise Lancashire would have lifted the county championship. The way in which that afternoon session in particular started to pan out, we had a couple of wickets falling here and there. The wicket of Tom Abel in particular was absolutely key, in my view, because he is the talisman of Somerset. Yeah. As soon as that wicket fell, things started to fall into place. And I noticed in particular, yourself, Bresnan, Burgess as well, behind the stumps, he's a live wire, isn't he, Michael Burgess, started geeing up the crowd. And as soon as Chris Wokes got the wicket of Jack Leach after tea, that was the moment I think everyone started to realise, hang on, we're going to do this. There was only two wickets left. Craig Miles then got Lewis Gregory out, which was a little bit of a strange dismissal, to be honest. It was like a wide uppercut, wasn't it? And Burgess's celebration, I'll never forget it. I don't know what on earth he was doing. He threw up in the air. Yeah, started fist pumping. It was like he was having a boxing match with someone, but that was a great celebration. And then that final wicket, obviously there was all the crowd getting behind it, every single ball, clapping and cheering, Milo beforehand, and then Norwell. That final wicket of Jack Brooks, Norwell to the captain, Will Rhodes, ecstasy. Absolute scenes in the Second City and across Shakespeare's County. And to be honest, I'm not an emotional person when it comes to cricket, but considering what I had seen as a Warwickshire fan, so I hadn't been there for 2012. I'd seen us get relegated in 2017, which was absolutely horrible. 2019 as well was a really rough year, wasn't it, for the club? Really, really rough year. We had so many injuries. We didn't really compete across formats. We relied on yourself and Dom Sibley and Rhodes to salvage our championship season. To have seen what this club had been through, to have seen what this group of lads have been through, and for it all to come to a close at our home ground to win county championship number 8 and to be there in the flesh is a feeling which simply cannot be replicated. That will forever be one of the best days of my life in a sporting sense. And nothing can ever, ever subtract away from that. It was absolutely perfect. Weather was brilliant. The performance was complete. The bowling was outstanding. The crowd was on another level. 2,000 people in at Edgbaston for a championship match, and it felt like 20,000. It felt like the place was full. The atmosphere was electric. And then at the end, when things started to settle down, people started to realise what we've done. You just sit back, you sit down in your seat, and you go, you know what, we're champions. We're not just champions of Warwickshire, or champions of the Midlands, champions of England and Wales, an entire country. It doesn't get any better than that, Sam. And again, what you guys provided on that day and throughout that entire season, you've just given a generation of Warwickshire fans their 2012 moment. So there you go. That's it from a fan's perspective. I know I've just rambled on a bit there, but the fact
you summed it up better than I guess I could ever try in terms of articulating the feeling that was around that ground. Like, I remember obviously, that as you alluded to, you know, you alluded to there, the pure XC, obviously, when we got the final wicket, like, pure out-of-body experience. Like, I didn't know what was doing. It was just pure ecstasy. And then, as you say, you start to realise what you've done. And it's just, you know, a few lads got emotional. I remember, you know, going back, walking up the stairs, and you got people behind the scenes that I guess you don't really see. You got Mostert, Cookie, you know, Murph and Rob in the dressing room attendant, Frosty, Westy, Trotty, like all these lads that put in hours and hours of graft to make sure we're able to do what we do. And to see them emotional, or just as emotional, I guess, as what we are, really brings to, I guess, like how much of a family it is. Granted, like obviously you alluded to there, we've had some ups and downs as a club over the last few years. Like there's no shying away from that. But to share that moment as a club, as a team, when I say team, fans included, like it was something that you can't put into words. I guess, you know, you had to have been there to experience it. And I wasn't there in 2012. I arrived 2013, but I remember every, you know, because there were lads who won in 2012 who were there in 2013, 2014, 2015. They kept going back to, you know, 2012. And they kept saying was, one, how tough it is, and two, how special it was, you know, obviously to win a county champ. So granted, obviously 21, it was tough. There's no shying away from that. But two, to go through those tough times, especially, you know, you look at Hampshire being one of the pivotal tough times in a low scoring game, to then have the win against Somerset after a long season, probably goes to show how special it is. And, you know, eight times in however long, you know, Warwickshire have been around, like you can't put it into words, but it was definitely emotional. Like, you know, even you got some of the less emotional guys in the change room, I guess, showing that a little bit more. It just goes to show how much it means to everyone. But I guess, you know, we keep talking about 2021, but obviously the overriding feeling is I want more of it, because that feeling is, you know, it's not something you can recreate, because I think that's what professional sport is. It's just so high and low, but those highs are definitely, they stick with you, that's for sure. But you summed it up better than I ever could, I guess, watching, because you have a different perspective than, I guess, what we do. But I feel like, you know, it's something that I'll never, ever, ever forget.
Well, I'll tell you what, Sam, we would be in trouble if my services were needed on the field. We wouldn't be winning county championships, let me tell you that, with my, what was it, 11.5 batting average, not quite 59.78 world record. Well, no,
to be fair, I think I average about 11 after a few championship games, so I've been there myself. But
county championship in professional cricket, I'm playing village cricket, batting number 10, yeah. Trust me.
Mate, you know what I mean?
It's different.
Village cricket. Who do you play village cricket for?
I play for a team called Rowington.
Rowington.
Exactly. Never heard of them. They're not exactly Birmingham League.
I'm an adopted Brummie, to be fair. I've never heard of Rowington.
It's not in Birmingham.
Where is it?
Middle of the countryside.
Oh, beautiful. 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 Middle of the countryside. Wowzers. Where though? How far from Brum?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Including traffic, I'd say about 25-30 minutes.
Oh, not too bad. We've gone completely off topic here when you said village cricket. Sounds a beautiful area to be fair.
Sam, it doesn't matter. It's a podcast. This is the beautiful thing about the podcast. It's a chat
about
cricket.
You just never know where it's going to go.
Exactly. And that is why it's my favourite content to produce. It's a chat about cricket. It's nice and laid back. We're talking all things Warwickshire. I'm not complaining, even if we have gone slightly off script, because we can always go back to it as well. That's the beauty of a long conversation.
Rowington.
Shout out to Rowington. I'll be playing for him again this season, and yeah, fingers crossed we can replicate what the Bears did and maybe get some silverware.
Would you say you're rebuilding? Because I've been there. Takes a few years, but once you rebuild, you know, sky's the limit. You know what I mean?
Sam, it's funny you mentioned that. If you ever want to come down for a game, there we go. We'll start winning trophies then. I mean, we're in the fourth division at the moment, so we can do with all the help we can get, to be honest. But yeah, unless I unleash my inner Sam Hain, maybe some of the boys unleash the inner Ollie Stone and Henry Brooks and Chris Wokes, then awesome. We might get somewhere. But talking of winning trophies then, in terms of that day, just one final thing I wanted to ask, actually. In terms of the emotions, what was it like in that dressing room afterwards? Because we've seen the behind the scenes, Warwickshire produced a fantastic film documenting that on their YouTube channel. Then there were the post-match interviews. Mark Robinson was basically in tears. You had a nice cheeky peck on the cheek from Dom Sibley, which I imagine made lots of people jealous.
Great interview, that one, there.
Amazing. Birmingham's my city. I'll never ever forget.
What is he on about there? Oh, God. He still cringes about that. I bring it up occasionally. I go, mate, what were you thinking there? He's like, lad, I know. What was I doing? He's like, I can't watch it.
It was hilarious, though.
Great interview. Sorry, yeah.
Elite
what was
interview.
It like? What was it like after? Is that what you're...
Yeah, what was the mood like in the dressing room?
Again, obviously the final wicket goes out of body. Don't know what happened. Just everyone in a huddle, pure jubilation. And then obviously walking back was quite special. Again, like I look back on it now and I wish I took it in more. Like I remember obviously walking up the steps. You know, I alluded to before, like you see everyone that you know, you don't see a lot of the backroom staff. Most of the squad were there. And I'm going to be honest, we got into the change room and it's pretty much what the scene show. Like everyone is over the moon. Tunes are going, you know, beers are flying out. And it wasn't, for me personally, it was pure ecstasy the whole night. And it wasn't really... You know, I'm going to say it wasn't until the end of season awards that I guess I was able to sit down, because it was a few weeks later. I think it was a month later or whatever it was, that you had the whole Warwickshire family in one room and you were able to sit down. And that's where personally it hit me that what we achieved as a club, you know, obviously that feeling didn't happen during the day. It was pure... You know, everyone is absolutely buzzing. It's just like, we just won the championship here. Yeah. And then it wasn't really until we sat down, we had the end of season awards, that we were able to, you know, I remember doing a Q&A, and I absolutely hate Q&As. Like, one of my fears, like, I just don't really like speaking in front of, you know, a lot of people. And I one of the questions popped up. I pretty much said the same answer. Like, no matter what happens now, like, this club will... this family will forever be known as, you know, the title winning team of 2021. And that is so, so special. Like I said to it before, like when that final wicket happened, that whole night went in fast forward. I'm telling you now, it happened so quick, so, so quick. And I just wish I was able to take it in a little bit more. But that's the beauty of it. You know what I mean? Like, I just remember going around the ground. I remember taking the trophy over to, you know, a few of the fans, because I said before, like, as much their trophy as it is ours. And then, you know, at the end of the day, you know what it's like, the beers flow and then the night goes on and you, before you know it, it's 4:30 and it's time to go. but it's something that, you know, I can't remember a lot of in terms of how I felt. You know, it's just something I just remember going around, lots of hugging, you know, lots of, you know, beers are flying everywhere, tunes are going, Matt Lamb's on the tunes. And it's just something that pretty much I remember exactly, because I watched that hour thing as well and I couldn't stop smiling because it just takes me back to that moment. It's something that's tough to put into words, but if you watch it, you know, those emotions are very raw and very real. And it's tough to sit here and to describe them to you now, because it's something that's very in tune with how I felt in that moment. So I can't really sit here and give you an exact fear. An exact feeling of how I felt when that final wicket took, all the celebrations that followed. I don't really know how to describe it. I guess we've tried to describe the last half an hour about that day.
True.
But as I say, the little collage that the club put together will be able to show or forecast any emotions that I could ever be able to, I guess, articulate to you now. So I'm not sure if I've answered that, but just very real, very raw, and something that I want more of. I want more.
Don't we all? I'll tell you what, I like the ring of number nine in 2022. That's what I like, approaching double digits.
Could you imagine? Because you've got to be honest, like, I remember, you know, if you said that we were going to win the championship in, you know, before the season, and we're not, no. You know, we're obviously all building towards a goal down the line. We knew we had something special. Very much, you know, a lot of it was, obviously Robbo came in this year, but the work Trout's put in before, like, it was very much the work he was done. So he, you know, I remember doing an interview with Brian Halford, the
legend,
about it. Exactly. I said, look, I got emotional, but I was very, very poignant in the way that I said, look, Trout's put in so much work. So he's a part of this. You know what I mean? And obviously I know he's not coach, but the work he did to bring this squad to where it is now, whether he knows it or not, he played a massive role in us, obviously winning the championship. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're at the club now or you leave down the line, like, no one will be able to take that away from you, what was achieved last year. So, yeah, we keep going back to 2021 because it was a hell of a moment. But, yeah, as you say, hopefully number nine. But we were just hoping, right, if we get to the top flight, Super September, anything can happen. And as it comes to it, we got to the top flight and then it was just an old-fashioned Western shootout. And I guess on some tight games, we came on the better end of the stick. So it's amazing how it sort of panned out.
It was perfect. And it's funny you mentioned actually Jim Troughton. Again, yeah, another former guest here at the podcast. We do have a lot of former.
He's
and
a good man.
He's a brilliant man. And honestly, when I got back from Edgbaston, I received an email from him. And I couldn't believe it because obviously he's a legend of the club. We had him on the podcast before and he just said, enjoy it, Aaron. It was something as simple as that. And I just went back to him and I said, you know what, Trouts? Although some people might not be aware of it, you laid the foundation. In terms of this squad, a lot of the groundwork was built by Jim Troughton. He just wasn't experienced enough. We needed someone like a Robbo to come in and steer the ship. But he was the leader of that rebuild. He clearly instilled some very, very good morals and values in the squad. And it just required the finishing touch in 2021. And here we are. Here we are still celebrating in March 2022. Hopefully not too much because we do have to focus on the upcoming season as well. But it's just a season which will go down in history. This is the thing in cricket. These come around so, so few times. You barely ever get to celebrate a county championship. When you think of some clubs, there are three clubs in England who have never won one, let alone eight. And in my lifetime, I've witnessed two. It's absolutely extraordinary. I'm 20 years of age and I've only seen two. But the fact is, when you do win them, although it doesn't quite sink in on the day, and as you mentioned, where you're up till like 4:30 in the morning, beers flowing, as you so eloquently put it, Sam, when you do sit back and a few months pass, and maybe even a year passes, you realise that achievement is now set in stone for the rest of time. I recalled earlier 1911. I wasn't born in 1911, and yet I still know about that team led by Frank Foster and the influence that that had on Warwickshire's county championship winning form in years to come. It's a remarkable achievement. And to be honest, Sam, if there weren't so many Twitter questions, we could go on about it all night, to be honest, let alone an hour and a half. We could have a 6-hour long special like I tried to have with Darren Maddy, and we almost did. Lasted for 4 hours. But yeah, we'll try and get away from 2021 for the time being because we do have other things, obviously, to discuss before we get onto those questions. And one of the most pertinent things, actually, Sam, that I wanted to discuss in tonight's episode was your List A batting, because I'd absolutely love to get into the mindset of the man with the highest List A batting average of all time. For those who aren't aware, Sam, your batting average in the List A format, 50 overs, 59.78. I mention that pretty much every single time I bring up Warwickshire on the podcast. That is higher than Michael Bevan, higher than Virat Kohli, higher than Brendan McCullum, Ross Taylor, whoever you want in history. It's the highest recorded one ever. I would love to know your approach to List A batting in particular, because when you look at first-class cricket, you can look at things like playing the ball late, playing the ball under the eye line, knowing when to leave, knowing when to attack. And then I suppose on the flip side, in T20, you've got that knowing when to finish, knowing how to start an innings, knowing how to rebuild an innings. How exactly do you go about setting up a 50-over innings in particular? I imagine it's almost a hybrid of the two, is it not?
Wowzers.
A tough question, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm allowed to think about it. No. I got to be honest, in terms of my stats and stuff, I've only played 50 games, so there is hopefully a few more innings to go.
That might change
a little bit, but I guess with me and my 50-over batting, like it's a format that I guess you get the best of both worlds. I think, as you said there, it's a hybrid. Obviously, you've got the nuances of four-day cricket in terms of early on, and obviously as the innings progresses, it comes more like T20 towards the back end. But for me, my 50-over batting's been interesting. So I guess I have a clear game plan in terms of how I want to go about it. The quicker I can, I guess, immerse myself in the game situation, the game scenario, the better. And I guess I've been not lucky, but I guess I've had some success in 50-over cricket. That's, not being arrogant or cocky. It's just something that I have a lot of confidence going into, each innings of how I want to go about it. And I guess the more clarity you have going in before an innings, before a game, the better. Because then you're just able to go out there and play. I guess now looking at my 50-over batting, I'm just always looking to improve. Granted, I'm not an idiot. I do read, about strike rate, this and that. Look at England setup, how they play. I'm always looking, can I improve here? Can I strike at this? But I also look at what I bring and the positive I do bring to a batting lineup. So it is a catch 22. I know what I can do, but I also know where my ceiling is and, what I can and where I can improve in terms of my 50-over batting. But in terms of how I go about it, I haven't got an exact answer that I can sit here and tell you. Granted, I've got a game plan before each game that I go into. Obviously, we do a lot of analysis before each game in terms of bowlers, what they're looking to do. And then you just play the situation. I think for me, it's very simple. I'm looking to play strong shots. If I'm opening a batting three, you take all these things into consideration. And then after, the times I have played, obviously we're chatting about now, but it's been a while since I have played 50-over cricket. And then the field goes out and then you're able to pick up your ones and you're able to score and you're able to, I guess there's less pressure, because the field does go out and you're able to pick up your ones, twos, occasional boundary, etc. So you're able to build in innings that way. I guess for me, ever since I was young, one, I put a massive price on my wicket. Two is building innings. How can I build in innings in terms of 50-over cricket? And it's something that, I've done a lot of work on tactically, mentally. And then the quicker I can know about how I want to go about it, how I want to score, you do all that work prior. And then when you get into the game, it's just about playing. And the more free I can be out there, obviously, the better. Granted, as each game, you've got to adapt. And obviously, the more cricket you play, the different scenarios that you're faced with. But, you just hope that you've got the skills, I guess, and tools to be able to deal with whatever scenario you're faced with. And I guess I've been quite successful at that at the moment. But I do look at my game and see where I can improve as well, because granted, I want to, keep scoring runs for Warwick, and then hopefully down the line, you never know. We'll see where my game is, hopefully England. But, my 50-over batting, you did talk about the average, and there are a few not-outs there, which does help. But it's something that I do have a lot of confidence in. And I guess that is somewhat showed in, I guess, the innings that I have played for Warwickshire.
It most certainly has, and I just had to give some stats, if I may, Sam, because over the years, in terms of your Royal London One Day Cup record in particular, it's ridiculous. to be completely honest, 33 matches, 1,807 runs at 72.28, a strike of 88.49, which is something, as you said, you're looking to improve upon, but seven centuries and 10 50-plus scores. So basically, every two matches, you're hitting at least 50, which is absolutely stupendous, to be completely honest. And a great stat that I actually did an analysis of your 50 over batting, actually, in 2020. And between 2016 and 2019, you scored 26% of Warwickshire's entire 50 over runs, which for one person, not that bad, especially when you're in a team with the likes of Ian Bell, Jonathan Trott, William Porterfield, Varun Chopra. The list can go on, to be honest. It's pretty good company to be alongside. And one particular innings, which I will never forget, I'm going to be honest, Sam, aside from your double century against Northants in your debut year, which you described as a decent season, might I just add, decent season, becoming the youngest ever Warwickshire player in first-class history to score a century and a double century, surpassing the great Ian Bell. My other favourite innings was the Bears versus Pears derby at New Road in 2019, and you went absolutely ballistic against the Pears, 161 out. I can see you nodding. I'm guessing a very, very special day. So do I, quite vividly. In terms of that innings, because you mentioned scenarios beforehand, we got off to quite a slow start in that game. How did you build that innings? And in particular, how on earth did you finish it? Because it seemed to be six after six after six in the final five overs.
Yeah, I think something, I look back at that game in particular, but I guess that was just one scenario where I think we lost a few wickets early on. And what you got to remember is 50 overs, granted, 50 overs is a long time to bat. You know what I mean? So it does give you time. I think you look at England, the way they play, like there's a lot of depth in that England team. I look at that and go, wowzers, like if I want to be in that England team, I know what I need to improve. Obviously, I know where I want to get. I look at that innings against the Pears, and obviously we lost a few wickets quite early. I think I remember I was like 40 off 60. Like, by no means was I scoring quick, but I just knew if I just hang in there, if I just know in that one thing I do pride myself on is that no matter how far I'm behind, I know I will catch up. I just know. And then I think I got to, was it 100? Yeah, I think I got 100. And then it was just, okay, it was just go time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we were able to, I think Banksy and I put on a little butt partnership. And it's just about clawing momentum back. You know, that's why 50 over is such an awesome format. Because it's an elongated game. It's not like T20 where everything's, you know, everything's fast-paced and action. There is actually a bit of time between, I think, 20, 35 overs, that 50-over gap where, you know, there's a bit of cat and mouse. And I remember, obviously, losing a few wickets early, right, let's just stick in here. Because I know, obviously, if we get to 35 overs, wickets in hand, like, you know, we can take this team apart. We can take this attack down. And that's always, obviously, weighing in the back of my mind. It's just when to go. Granted, in my career, I've probably got a few times waiting too long where I should have gone earlier. But obviously, that's a different discussion. But, you know, I look at that innings out. I remember getting to 100. I was like, right, I think everything's just trying to hit out of park here. And, it's something I try not to look back too on, because obviously I'm more glass half full sort of bloke. So I tend to look at innings like that and I sort of shrug them off. So obviously I know what I can do, but I'm always obviously looking, you know, where I can improve, how I can get better. I guess that's something that's been instilled in me from an early age. So again, I don't take praise too well. So when someone says it's a, you know, really cool innings, I tend to smile and laugh it off. But, I do look at innings like that, and I guess it's just what the team needed at the end of the day. And it's, you are right, to do against Worcester is quite cool. Obviously being our rival, but I guess it just showed, because I actually remember, I will say one thing, I do remember, I think I was struggling in terms, I think, I don't know what my scores were, but I remember battling a bit. I wasn't getting any runs in the games prior, but I knew I was batting well. And it's one thing. This is where cricket is so fine and fickle, is that no matter how great you feel in the nets, like, there's no guarantee to score runs. And I remember hitting the ball really well, but I just wasn't scoring runs in 50-over cricket. But I just knew in the back of my mind, I was like, there's a score around the corner here. And I actually remember being really nervous before that game. I'm a terrible watcher and I always get nervous. You know, even after the cricket I have played, you know, I still get anxious before an innings. So I don't think that will sort of ever go away. I just remember being really nervous. And that can sometimes be seen in my movements at the crease. But as I say, I remember, getting to 40, 40, 50. And then obviously I was able to just play. And, you know, I look back at it now. It's, you know, one of the innings that I do look at and go, you know, that was quite special. That was quite cool.
Well, it was unbelievable from a fan's perspective, Sam, to be completely honest. And it's funny you mentioned there about the praise of it. In that case, if you think you can do better, Sam, you're right. You can definitely go and score a double century this summer. Fingers crossed that
will. In terms of personal goals, I don't have too many, but I definitely want to score 100 in T20 cricket. I've been close a couple of times, haven't quite got over the line. 100 in T20 and a double 150-over cricket would be, you know, they're definitely goals of mine that hopefully I'll tick off somewhat down the line. But we'll wait and see. But you are right. If that day comes and you're in the crowd, I'll put my bat. Yeah. I'll give you one of these ones.
I'll wear a Sam Haines shirt. I'm not sure if you've seen the Newcastle fans with the Joe Ellington. They've got like Hawaiian shirts and they got his face on. We'll wear one of those for the day. That'll be, my goodness, that'll be an iconic celebration. Crikey. But fingers crossed that happens in 2022. Obviously against Worcester, that'll be quite nice in the derby, considering a few years back, Moeen Ali. Still remember that in 2019, absolutely hammered us with a century, didn't he? Under the Sky Sports cameras.
Yes. Oh, my. Like, everything. I remember that was that the quarter? No, quarter or semi?
In 2019, we didn't reach it. That was in the group stage.
In 50-over? Was it 50-over cricket?
Sorry, I was on about the T20.
Oh, he was about T20. Oh, he's done that a few times too, Fanny.
He's done it loads.
50-over, I think there was a 50-over game at our place where Mo, everything he hit just seemed to be sailing on the fence. I remember Clarke, he got caught down leg side or something early on. And then Mo came and absolutely whacked it everywhere, won them the game. And he's done that a few times. You are right. You said the T20. He's done that in both, to be fair. He loves playing against us as much as I love playing against Worcester.
I know. That's what's quite good, actually, to be fair. From a neutral perspective, for those who aren't Warwickshire or Worcestershire fans, that is like a good battle, actually, between you two. Moeen for Worcester, Samuel Hayne for Warwickshire. It's a very, very good battle, that, to be honest, for the neutral cricket fan. And in terms of your knocks against Worcester, would you say that was your best one, Sam? Over the years, I imagine it's up there.
In terms of 50 over or T20?
Any format, would you say that's your best ever knock against the pairs?
I'm going to be honest, I don't look too much back at my knocks, to be fair, because it's just not something I really do. But if I'm sitting here now, there's been a couple, there's been obviously that one, and then we play the T20 game against Worcester at our place. I think it was just recently where I think we had to win. I think Carlos and I put on...
At the end, in the final three overs.
Goodness. We were 2-3-4 down quite early. And again, like, even in T20 cricket, this is where I'm, you know, without being a badger or going too much into it, even in T20 cricket, there is time to rebuild. Granted, you don't have as much time, but you know, even Carlos, I remember Carlos being, you know, 15 off 25 or something. But even it shows that at the end, he was able to catch up. And, you know, all it takes a few out the middle and you find yourself right. The momentum can the momentum can change. So I probably look at either that one or that T20 innings against, Worcester at our place, me and Carlos, where we were, I think, in a little bit of trouble and we're able to rescue the boys. And then obviously able to put a score on the board, and then obviously we're able to defend. Probably either of those two.
Honestly, that's another night that I will never, ever forget, because up until that point, I've watched quite a few derbies. It's been quite a few years, actually, since we'd beat them in the T20. Worcestershire, obviously, they've become quite the good outfit in that format. But on that night as well, it was one of my long-term friends. It was his first ever cricket game. He was born in Iran. So in Iran, cricket, not really a massive sport. Yeah. By the end of that game, when we won, he almost tackled me down the stairs of the RES Wyatt stand. That's how involved and engaged in the game he got. I was absolutely terrified for my life at that point. But he was absolutely loving every single minute of that. And Carlos, wasn't his birthday, was it, or something like that? There was a special occasion with Carlos on that day.
I don't know, to be honest with you. Might have been. I don't know, to be honest with you. But to be fair, you get T20 nights, which are quite cool at that. Like, people who've never experienced a game to come down and to witness a game like that. Like, granted, you know, if he came a few weeks after or before where we got bowled out by knots for not many, it could have been a different story. But we won't talk about that. But
let's not.
No, I'd rather not. But you are right, though. Like, you look back at innings like that, games like that, they're pretty cool. I enjoy games like that, definitely. And for someone who's never experienced cricket before, as you say, if he's tackling you down, because I'm guessing he's excited, well, I hope so, then, you know, I guess it just introduces new people to the game, which at the end of the day, it's what it's all about.
Well, I hope it was out of excitement, but he absolutely loved it. And actually, Sam, it's funny you mentioned that. He's coming back this year. So, yeah, he will be back at Fortress Edgbaston, which is fantastic.
You let me know. If he ever wants to come down, just give me a shout. And obviously, I'd be happy to leave you or him or together a few tickets. If you ever want to come down, just give me a shout. There you go.
And that right there, Sam, is why you're one of my favourite players. Things like that. You just understand the club. But no, I'll definitely be there for the majority of the games this summer. In fact, last year, I missed one. I missed Northants at home. And I was absolutely gutted, to be honest. That was in the Royal London One Day Cup. No, in fact, I missed two. I missed Matt Lamb. Lamil Cumblay getting 4 for 36 against Somerset as well in the 50 over.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All the point. Perfect. Got the foam. I mean, we need to get him on the podcast at some point. The Wolverhampton.
Mate, he would be unbelievable for the pod if you can understand him. Like, you might need to get a translator, to be fair, for the people
remember,
listening.
I'm from the Midlands. I know my Wolverhampton accents.
He's a proper Brummie, to be fair. Like, on a night out, even like, granted, like, I feel like I'm an adopted Brummie, but my missus, I remember being out with my missus. Like, we went out. And she was like, what is he saying? Like, you can't understand him. Like, he goes Brummy and then there's a switch. He just goes even more like proper, proper black country. Like, can't understand a word he's saying. But he would be a great addition to your podcast because he's a good man and he's funny as well. He's a real, real good character to have around the dressing room, that's for sure.
And he's improving a lot as well. I will say that about Matt Lamb. He scored 173. I think it was against Essex in 2019. I was there for that, actually, funnily enough, as I have been for most games in the last 3 years, to be honest, aside from COVID in 2020. But yeah, honestly, he's a very, very talented cricketer, Matt Lamb. I think he goes under the radar, but when you need him the most, even with the ball now with his leg spin, very, very handy option.
I got a lot of time for Lammy because even like you look at Lammy, right? And that's a prime example, like someone who's grown up, a bit like Wokesy, like grown up in the system, Warwickshire through and through, obviously plays at Barnt Green. And someone like him to be a part of that side last year, obviously we won't go back to it for too much longer.
We can.
But for him, we can. But for someone like him, he's obviously been in the system, growing up, age group cricket, to be on the staff now for a while. Granted, probably hasn't got the opportunities that he wanted in previous years, but found himself playing, you know, quite a bit of cricket in the first team last year. For him, you know, to be involved in that final against Somerset, like even chatting to him, like he's quite an emotionless lad. Like he's very stern, very much what you see is what you get. And to see him, lad, the smile on his face, like that will never, ever leave me. So people like him, how much it means to people like Lammy who have been in the club since, you know, since a young age to come through, as I said, you know, I look at Lammy and go, that's pretty special. Yeah, I've got a lot of time for that boy. He's one of my good mates at the club. So, I can't speak highly enough of him.
Yeah, he's got a good bromance as well, hasn't he, with Lord Sibbers. Those two are pretty dynamic duo, aren't they?
Yeah. You get there. as I say, they're good fun on a night out. They're good lads. They're two, I think, obviously, as you say, Lammy's a hell of a cricketer. Only started bowling leg spin, you know, 18 months ago, and he's already taking wickets, pouring pints when he takes them. Hell of a celebration.
Great and celebration. And then
obviously, you look at Sibbo, like, again, you know, I don't want to go around the whole dressing room, but, you know, Sibbo, what he's done, you know, not just for us, but obviously for England, you know, it's Test Match 100, like, you know, that's what dreams are made of. So, you know, I as much as I love him, I want to see him back in that England shirt because I know how good a player he is as well. The old vicar, as I say, hopefully we see a few runs for him early in the season and we see him back in an England shirt.
Well, obviously, I echo those sentiments. Absolutely. One of my proudest moments recently as a Warwickshire fan was watching him and Ollie Stone at Edgbaston. It was incredible. Really, really was. I mean, to just think of the last decade or so, Bell, Trott, Wokes, Sibbers, Stone, hopefully in the next year or so, Sam Hain as well, added to that list. We are very lucky, to be honest, at Warwickshire to have so many England players, and fingers crossed for Sibbers. He can get back into that test side because he's a hard worker and he's a prolific run scorer as well. I know he's not to everyone's cup of tea in terms of technique and in terms of the amount of balls that he faces, but he's a top, top cricketer. Is Dom Sibley, as we as Warwickshire fans have known for, what, the past 4 or 5 years now. He really is a fantastic, fantastic opening batsman. But Sam, I suppose talking of your teammates, and we might actually need a part two, to be honest, at some point, because there are that many questions. I'm aware we've only got about half an hour. We could. This is the thing, Sam. This is the thing that I love about the podcast, though. It's the fact that it's just a chat. You know, we can go off script. That's the beauty of the Counter Cricket podcast. But we have got a load of Twitter questions. And I suppose the first ones that we have to go to are from a certain Oliver Hannah-Dalby, one of my absolute favourite players at Edgbaston. Lovely fella. He came onto this podcast live from his car in the Sainsbury's car park talking about his dog. And he is a fantastic host as well of the Bears Pod Blast. And one of his questions, Sam, I'm not sure if you've seen these.
I've seen them, yeah, but I'm trying to remember which one you're going to ask it.
Well, I'll flip the order slightly because one of them, I remember this exactly from the Pod Blast, and I'd like you to repeat the story if you could. And it's the one about ghosts. Sam, do you believe in ghosts?
What? Oh my, that's a stitch up. No, well, Ollie and I live about 5-10 minutes away from each other. So we do spend a lot of time in the car traveling to games and whatnot. You know, we do chat and stuff, and I don't know how the discussion came up, to be fair, but we talk about everything, life. And it just so happened we talk about ghosts one afternoon. And I just said, mate, yeah, I believe in them. Like, simple as that. Like, I think there's life beyond this one. We got real, real deep, right? And he's looking at me, right, going, you're an idiot, ain't he? Like, shut up, lad. And I'm going, Ollie, I'm telling you now, like, you can't change my mind. It's what I believe. And he basically just said, like, I don't believe you, called me out. And he just, ever since then, like, he just hasn't let it go that it's something that I believe in, like, rightly or wrongly. Obviously, amongst other things, but it's just one of the chats we've had on a game. And obviously, Ollie's one of my good mates, to be fair. So he's properly stitched me up with the questions he's asked here. Granted, obviously, I said to you before we started recording, he's thrown me under the bus as well with a few of his answers. So I'm not really happy. So, yeah, look. I'm going to be honest with you. I do believe in them. All right. You might not, but it's just something what I believe. Rightly or wrongly, it's just is what it is.
There we go, folks. That has been confirmed on the Counter Cricket podcast. Sam Hain is a believer. Believe he believes in ghosts.
Oh, Ollie, you've stitched me here.
He has indeed. And you think that's a good start. I would absolutely love to know the origin of this particular question. Genuinely, I laughed at this for a solid 5 minutes.
Right.
Sam Hain, have you ever hammered a screw? Have you?
There's a few questions here that I know. There's obviously this one. And then there's, I know he asked a question about a certain animal that I picked up as well, which...
The dog?
I'll tell you that one as well. Right, so I... I'm going to put it out there. I suck at DIY. Like, I hate it. Hate it. Any DIY, like I said to you, Ollie lives around the corner. So I call up Ollie. Ollie, I need help with this. Can you help me? Yeah, I'll be there. Right. I'll get the kettle on. We'll crack on. So I bought a house. Right. Moved in, blah, blah, blah. Putting a mirror up. And then Ollie, right. I called up Ollie. Ollie, I have to put this mirror. What do I do? And he's like, right, get a screw, drill a hole, wall plug, get a screw, whack a screw in, put it up, done. I was like, all right, sweet, sounds easy. And then I said to Ollie, something's not right here. Something's really not right. I'm looking at my wall and there's about 5 or 6 holes in my wall. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, I'm following your instructions. I'm drilling a hole, putting the wall plug in, and I'm whacking the screw in and it's just not going in. And Ollie like thought about it for a second. He's like, right, I'll come over. And so he came over and I'm like, he looked at me, well, Haney, what are you doing here? There's about 6 holes on your wall. It's pretty simple stuff. And I go, Ollie, I'm following your instructions, pal. Like, this is what I've done. So I showed him, I went, drill a hole, wall plug in, whack the screw in. And I just see him like turn away and like just start laughing. And I was like, what are you laughing at, lad? Like, this is what I've done. Like, this is what you've told me. He went, mate, you've been whacking in the screw, not screwing it. And I've gone, oh my God, you're kidding me. So in a way, he's stuffed me outside because I was following his instructions. And that story there, like, I obviously got him round, but you know what dressing rooms are like. As soon as he found out, within 5 minutes, everyone knew. And then for a good week, I was just a laughing stock repeating this story. And then I didn't know actually how much of a belter it was till every person I told, everyone was just cracking up. And I guess if anything, it just shows how much I hate DIY that I can't even put a mirror up on my wall because I'm whacking in screws when I should be screwing them in. Like, I look at it now, I'm going, what was I doing? See, this is what I mean. Like, I was just so naive, like trying to whack in screws. I look at it now. I'm like, Haney, what were you doing, pal? But it makes for a good story, doesn't it?
It does. I've tried to contain my laughter.
Trying to whack in a screw.
It's not only that, it's also the bluntness of the question. Have you ever hammered in a screw? I can't say I have. Because yes, the whole I point have. Of the screws that you I screw have. Them in with a screwdriver.
You know, the worst thing is, I did it more than once. Like, I did about 6 times. So I look at my wall, and there were 6 perfectly aligned holes down my wall where the mirror was meant to go. And the funny thing is, like, you know, a week later went by, and we were getting downstairs painted. And the poor bloke who was painting our house, like, took off the mirror. And saw like 6 holes in the wall. And he's gone, what's going on here? And I just went, mate, you don't want to know. I think I blamed it on my missus. I said, yeah, it's not me, to be fair. It was my missus. So, no, it's a good story, to be fair. I look back and now, it's all about learning. So I've learned now, don't whack in a screw. You screw it in, hence the word. You know, life lessons, eh?
Exactly.
Life lessons. But my God, was that embarrassing trying to like defend myself in front of the lads. You got no leg to stand on.
No, but as you said, we live, we learn. Screw exactly. With a screwdriver, nail with a hammer.
Oh my God, you make it sound so simple, but I was so adamant. I was like, yeah, I've nailed it. You make it sound so easy. And it definitely is that easy.
Sam, I'm going to be honest. I keep on mentioning this, like 160 episodes in. That's one of the funniest stories we've had on the podcast.
Oh, mate, I've got a belter for you as well about the pick.
Go on, the dog. Go on.
Right. So this is another story that Ollie's like, mate, you don't know how good of a story you have here. So Ollie asked, for those who don't know, Ollie asked, one of his questions was, did you pick up the wrong dog or something like that? Or have you ever picked up the wrong dog? So I remember we had a stag do. So I think we had Ollie stagged up in Liverpool over the weekend, training on Monday. So I came in on training. I'm going to be honest with the listeners. not just me, but people who were there, we were hungover. We were tired, hungover, back into training. I think we had boxing in the afternoon. I think my missus was in an island. So we put our dog, We put our dog Sky, you know, in like a doggy daycare sort of place for the weekend. I picked her up on Monday. Training in the morning, gym, and then we had boxing. And then after boxing, I was going to go pick up Sky. So I'm driving there. It's about half an hour away over in Sully. I'm driving there, open the door. Hi, I'm here to pick up Sky, like little Westie. She's like, yeah, one moment. They bring me out Sky, right? They put me out this little Westie. And I'm like, all right, yeah. In you go. Put her in this little bed. Got a bed, obviously, on the driver's side. Put her in. All ready to go. Pull out, start driving away. And then, like, I was so sure that this was my dog, right? So sure. I pretty much turn off, I think it's like the M6. Obviously, you go M6 to the A38 down through Spaghetti Junction, whatever. And then I get a call. I get a call from my missus saying, have you got Sky in the car? I go, yeah, she's right next to me. She's like, all right, whatever. Hang up. And then I get a call from the doghouse. In the doghouse over in Sully Old. I go, hi, have you just picked up, you know, a little Westie? And I've gone, yeah, I have. Yeah, Sky's next to me. And then I'll never forget, like, the lady on the phone, the next words were, yeah, no, you haven't got Sky. You've got Herbie. And I've gone, wait, what? Excuse me? And I've literally looked at this dog next to me who I thought was Sky, right? And the whole journey home, Sky, I was like, wow, Sky's really grumpy at me here. Like, I'm so sorry, but, you know, I was away, my missus was away, because I'm sorry, we had no other option. She was facing, like, head out the window, not giving me any attention whatsoever. I was like, ah, oh, she's just tired. Like, she's giving me donuts. And then I found out that it wasn't Sky. This dog was, in fact, named Herbie. And then I've looked down, I've gone, Herbie? And then, like, I will never forget. Obviously, we're on video now. He's gone, what? And looked at me, ears up like you would never believe. And then, like, pretty much the attention I got as soon as I found out his name was Herbie, I was like, hello, how you doing? You all right? And then I've panicked. I've gone, oh, my God, what has happened here? So I've had to, like, turn around, drive back, hand him over this dog. And then as soon as they brought Sky out, Sky's, like, wriggling around, wouldn't sit still, wouldn't behave. I was like, oh, my God, how have I got these two mixed up? But I guess the worst thing was is that I didn't know this, but I did it, like, when I did towards the end, that Sky's a girl and Herbie's, in fact, a boy. And I didn't even notice. And I've just gone, I've driven 20 minutes with a dog that isn't even mine and not even realized. Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I can't be trusted. So Ollie was the first person I called, like, Ollie, you'll never believe what's just happened here, pal. And I told him, and as you can imagine, mate, like, he's burst out laughing. He's absolutely lost it. And then I've lost it because I couldn't quite believe it. That, in fact, yes, I have just picked up the wrong dog and pretty much driven home. But I promise you now, I would have gone all the way home and not even realized. I promise you, like, hand on heart, like, I would have driven in, parked up, dog out, straight in, welcome home, carry on. It probably wasn't until I let Herbie out for a wee where he's cocked his leg. And I've gone, actually, something's not right here. Oh, God, it's so good. Again, you look back at it now, I just laughed at it. But, yeah, it wasn't. I just remember driving back then. The poor lady was like, you could see she was really worried. She's like, who have I just given this dog to? But it was, again, it was, you know, it was a mistake that happened. To be fair, I got to send you two photos because they, in my eyes, they look
so Do alike. They look similar?
No. They look nothing alike. But again, I was just so tired, long day at training. I just wanted to get home. I drove half an hour with the wrong dog. Poor Sky was probably there going, hang on a minute.
You're going without me.
Yeah. Oh, it was real good, to be fair, real good. Look back on it now and you got to laugh, but there was definitely some tense moments from the poor lady at the doghouse saying, oh my God, who have I just given this dog to? Some stranger. Oh God.
I need a moment to compose myself, to be honest, Sam. Flipping heck. Yeah. We've not had a story like that on the podcast.
It's a hell of a story, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's absolutely incredible.
But I guess the worst thing is, the bit I don't really tell is that, like, so my missus is like the primary like contact. So they've called my missus, right? So they've called my missus going, we're pretty sure we just gave your boyfriend the wrong dog. And my missus, bless her, she was like defending me. My boyfriend would never do that. He knows our dog. He would never, ever pick up the wrong dog. And then there's me who has picked up the wrong dog, who then has to call my missus and go, so if you never believe what's just happened here, I've just picked up the wrong dog. Little did I know till later that she was on the phone before telling them that I would never do such a thing. Like, you know, I know exactly what Sky looks like, et cetera, et cetera. And there I am cruising down the M6 with a dog named Herbie, who's a boy, and not Sky, who's a girl. Like, what am I doing? Anyway, there you go. There you go. There's two little stories, I guess, insights to the life of Sam Hain. Wouldn't know that, would you? It's not a story I tell many people because it's pretty embarrassing.
It's not, but Oliver Hammond-Dolby has absolutely knocked out of the park with those questions. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Not for the first time on the podcast either. As you said in the teammates thing, what's it, the teacher's pet, I think?
Yeah, I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with that. I've got to be honest with you. I do hit a lot of balls, yeah, I granted. But I'm not a teacher's pet. I'm not happy with that. That's like, come on, Ol. To be fair, I'm taking it as it's like, what's the word? It's affection, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm taking it as affection. He likes me deep down, doesn't he? Even though he won't admit it at all. But yeah, I said to you pre-recording, I wasn't happy with that. I was actually listening to that on the way back from Coventry, the old Ollie Hammond-Dolby podcast. He's another one. I got a lot of time for that boy. That man.
That rather tall man.
He's like a father figure to me. He's helped me a lot with DIY and obviously just life in general, me being over here. So he's definitely one of the good humans around. As you could probably agree with me on that front.
100%.
And all the members love him. All the members love him.
Because he's an incredible man. He really is. Yeah. And again, listeners, if you want to listen to that podcast with the owl, well worth it. Absolute gem of a human being. Sam, we've got tons to get through. We're going to need a part two, to be completely honest. We've been going for almost an hour and a half. So I'll try
keep
and
get... Keep going.
I'll try...
Now, we'll definitely do a part two, but as I say, if there's any more questions, you just rattle off any more and we'll try and answer them.
I was going to say that, Sam, be careful what you wish for, because with Darren Maddy, he said, carry on. We lasted for 4 hours. So
I'm still very surprised you had 30, but roundabout DMs of questions. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I think it's a good thing. And again, actually, for the listeners out there who have stuck with us this long for today's podcast, we will get through more of those in part two. That'll be a lot more focused as opposed to tonight's one. We'll focus and center it around the Twitter questions. But in terms of one question that I did really like the look of, to be honest, and this is from Cody. I thought this was a fantastic question, actually. And this is about your time in Bangladesh with Fortune Barishal, because some people might not have known this. It was only a short stint. Unfortunately, you didn't get to play a game. But you're in the same squad as one of our favourites here at the podcast, certain Jake Lintott, who was opening the batting with Chris Gayle, which is one of the best images I think I've ever seen in the game of cricket.
Agent Lintott.
Do you know where that comes from?
No. Is that
this
you?
This podcast.
Genuine.
Genuinely. Yep. Ask Jake. One of our first ever guests, Jake Lintott. In fact, I think he was episode number 9 or episode number 8. He was episode number 8, and that was the other one. He got George Garrett on the podcast.
Agent Lintott. Well, I've got to be honest with you. Yeah, and I guess he was actually one of the main reasons I was out there, to be fair.
So Agent Lintott strikes again.
Yeah, it's, to be fair. He texts me on a Thursday or Friday going, mate, there's a chance, you know, do you fancy coming out here for 2-3 weeks, whatever it was? You know, you might not play. Hindsight, I didn't play. But I sort of said, yeah, of course. Like, T20 cricket leagues in general is just something I'd, if I'm not playing in, you know, winter tours or whatever, or whatever it may be in the winter or after Christie, like, got to explore my options. So he texts me on a Friday. I think on a following Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever, as I was on a plane out to Bangladesh. And it was similar because I went there 2017, 2018, I can't remember, with Rangpur Riders. I was there for a lot longer. I didn't play. But, you know, I went out there. Those trips, I think I said before, those trips are what you make of it. Like, I was out there on grass, experienced a new culture, all those sort of good things. Granted, it's tough when you're not playing. Like, I want to be playing. You know, I want to be in that shop window showing what I can do, because you never know what doors it might open. So, you know, I was there for 3 weeks. Granted, being back, you know, I still got a lot out of that little trip, just being outside for one. But yeah, no, Agent Lintock got me out, the big fella. Got a bit of commission out of it as well. Nah, just joking. he's joked about it. But yeah, like, I think Linters did well. We found ourselves again. Lintock's a massive badger. Bless him. He loves it. Probably loves it more than anyone I really know. So to be around him, to chat with him, and to watch the likes of, as you say, Gale, Chris Gale, bravo. Shakib Alassane, mate, wowzers. Like, unbelievable. So, so good in terms of how he is as a bowler, captain especially, and obviously as a, I guess, an all-rounder, shall we say, because he definitely is an all-rounder. But, mate, watching him bowl, like, it's tough to put into words. Like, he can hit the smallest area in terms of, he can hit the same spot 6 times, but just subtle variations in terms of where his arm is, in terms of wrist, undercut. Like, it's fair play, mate. Like, it's so, so good. And to just be able to watch it, you can't buy that sort of experience. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why I sort of said, going out there, if I don't play, I want to be able to get as much out of it as I can. Even facing Mujeeb in the nets. So, so good. So, so good. And you, I guess it makes you realize when these sort of players go for big, big money, obviously in different franchises, there's a reason why. And I definitely found out firsthand facing these boys in the nets, like, they're properly good, properly, properly good. But, you know, Linton and I enjoyed it. It was actually quite nice to spend a bit of time with him. Obviously fellow Bear, away from the nets, obviously, because I know the lads were working hard here in the winter. Being stuck indoors can be a little bit, not boring is not the right word, but can get a little bit samey. So to get away for 3 weeks is, yeah, it was pretty cool, pretty nice. But I just would have loved to have played.
Oh, obviously. But as you said, it's what you make of it, isn't it? Those experiences. Yeah, like, the fact that you even got over there as well, it shows that there's clearly some attention, I suppose, and some want from franchises.
This is probably on a slightly different level. Obviously, there's the cricket element, 100%. But from a human level as well, like, it makes you appreciate how well, you know, I guess we have it here in the UK. I think it gives you a lot of perspective arriving back into the country. You know, you look at, you know, being over there and experience a different culture and, you know, spending 3 weeks in somewhere like Bangladesh. Yeah, if we're being honest, it's definitely, you know, poverty over there, and it makes you appreciate what you have back here, and I guess the quality of life that we have over here in the UK. So you definitely come back with a different sense and a different, I guess a different perspective on things. I guess, you know, I think me and Jake talked about it a few times, being over there, like, wowzers, like, sometimes you do forget. Sometimes you do forget, and you got to take a step back and realize that, I guess, we're quite lucky, you know, in a world that's so fast paced. Obviously, it's being over there for 3 weeks can definitely open your eyes That's for sure. So, definitely two. So obviously cricket, I learned a lot, but I came back with a different sense of perspective from a human level as well. Because it's, I guess you go there and you realise, wowzers, we got it good.
100%. Yeah, it is a shame though, isn't it? And of course, with such a vibrant culture as Bangladesh, they absolutely love their cricket. It's an incredible cricketing country.
Like watching, obviously we get the team bus, so we walk out what, 4:30, whatever it was, and then noise at, Gail, Bravo, Shakib, even Majib.
What about
even
Lintott? Yeah.
Even Lintott got a bit of noise. There was one person at the back going, Lintott. but the noise that they make when these people, they idolize these players, mate. They love it so much. They really, really do. They love the game. And it's again, it's quite cool to see how much, they're invested. I remember the final, obviously there wasn't a capacity crowd, but it might have been a 25% quarter full. And the noise that this crowd was making was unbelievable, nothing I've ever heard of. And it wasn't even capacity crowd. They absolutely love this sport. And they just idolize these players. Shakib was on the TV more than anyone I've ever seen. every advert, it's Shakib Al-Assam. He's Mr. Cricket over there. But even talking to him, he's so down to earth. You wouldn't even know. He's so down to earth, so humble. And just the way he talks about the game, you can't buy that sort of experience. Even though I didn't play, I definitely learned a lot just being around a few of these players. And I know Jake will be able to say the same.
Well, yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, another good season for Agent Lintott. Fingers crossed, Jay Lintz or Linsanity, whatever you want to call him, to be honest. He's got lots of nicknames now, hasn't he, Jay? Jay Lintz.
That one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
With the celebration. But yeah, obviously, that's excellent here for us as Bears fans as well. Fingers crossed that you two can have a good season, put those learnings into practice in 2022. Sam, because we are a little bit tight for time, we'll just have another couple of questions. One of them actually technically isn't a question, but I like this from Charlie because I think it sums up the sentiment of Warwickshire fans actually quite nicely. No question. I just want to say I love you, Sam. And that is from Charlie, CJAV on Twitter.
Thanks, Charlie. Feelings mutual. I don't know what I meant to reply with that. Reply to that with, to be fair, but I just gotta go say thank you. I love you too. Or is that a bit forward? I'll buy your pint.
That's up to Charlie.
I'll buy your pint.
There you go. That's a cracking offer.
I'll buy your pint. Say thank you for the love.
Oh, he's a massive Warwickshire fan, Charlie. Absolutely loves the Bears. Yeah, massive fan.
Who loves the Bears more? You or him? There you go, I put you on the spot.
You have put me on the spot. I don't know. I'm going to say Charlie. I'm a humble individual. Not too fussed about, titles and being the biggest fan in the world, but obviously this is my club. And to be fair, with the podcast, I've spent countless hours with Bears players, as the long-term listeners will know, and honestly very grateful that people can put up with my Warwickshire bias at times. It can get a little bit overwhelming for some listeners.
I love it, I do. I love it.
It's a great club. It's a great county.
It is a good club. Honestly, I said right at the start of the podcast, I don't know if it was pre-recording or what, but this club has given me so much. Not just me, but, fans, whoever it is, they give me a career, give me a life. As I said, Birmingham's now my home. I just love this place so much. So it's one of them, you're just trying to repay back, and I guess in the games moving forward, trying to repay back what this club have given me. So it's something I'll probably forever be trying to do. Like you, this club means not just a lot just to me, but to quite a few around this place. So I guess we can all share that love for Warwickshire, that's for sure.
We can indeed. And to repeat what you said earlier, the feeling's mutual. Very much so here on the podcast for the great Bear and Ragged staff. And Sam, actually, we'll go on to the final question for today. Again, listeners, we will do a part two, because there were just so many questions. I couldn't believe it, to be honest. And again, incredibly thankful and grateful for that, because there's, clearly an appetite to ask Mr. Sam Hain a lot of questions, quite clearly a lot of fans out there. in the Twitter sphere and, of course, on Instagram as well, Sam. But our final one, talking of massive Warwickshire fans, Andy Darbs on Twitter. Andy pretty much goes to every single Warwickshire match. Absolutely loves the Bear and Ragged staff. Haney, what are your thoughts on Warwickshire's other homegrown batting options, such as the likes of Lamb, Mousley, Jacob Bethel is another one, Ashish Chakrapani, who has the best reasons for absence in cricket history. He missed the Derbyshire game because of brackets, education. He had to go and do an A-level exam. But in terms of the Warwickshire Academy, Sam, who do you say we should be looking out for?
Grant, I think, first of all, Warwickshire put a massive pride on the academy. I think ever since I arrived at the club, that the messages I got, or the chat, was that the academy is something that they want to spend a lot of time on, because you want to be producing homegrown players. So you look at Lammy Wokesy, obviously myself to a certain degree. There's the likes of one Jacob Bethel, who we saw what he could do in the Under-19 World Cup over in the West Indies. He's certainly one that I look at. He's one of Powley's boys as well. So I look at someone like Jacob and I go, wowzers, like, he's definitely one that can influence the game in all areas. He bats, he bowls, he fields. But you look at Yatesy as well. Young lad, nothing ever really seems to phase Yatesy. He's one of the lads who you look at and he's calm, collected in all scenarios. As an opener, it's a great trait to have. But you look at our academy now, there's definitely a few lads who are younger coming through. I've heard the names of one, Hamza Sheikh, who's one that's apparently very, very exciting.
Very good.
So there's definitely a few boys who are coming through. And that's what you really want, because let's be honest, Warwickshire is a big county and a big club. And you want to be producing your homegrown players and homegrown talent, because it's just what I feel like, one, you do. You want to be poaching players. Obviously, there's an element of that. But there's obviously an element of you want to be producing your own players. So to have a few on the staff now, but also a good contingency coming through, it's very, very exciting. I don't want to name too many names, because you don't want to add too much pressure, because you want to give them room to learn, grow, and obviously people learn at different stages. You're at Lintott, who now is one who's 28, signed his first deal last year to come on. So someone like him, so people adapt at different stages of the career. So it's just nice to look at from my perspective. And I look at, as I said, I look at someone like Bethel and I go, wowzers, this boy can really, really play. But as I say, he's got that cool headedness, but obviously being from, I think he's from Barbados or something, isn't he? So he's definitely got some of that West Indian swagger about him. Not much phases him. So I guess you can see an element of that in the way he plays cricket. So he's definitely one that hopefully we see a lot of. Again, I've named a few there, but I'm assuming I'm missing a couple more. Dan Mousey, there's another one for you.
We've had him on the podcast.
The biggest badger I've ever met as well, to be fair. Him and Lintott, two badgers. But again, I look at Mousley, Yates, Lamb, and obviously Bethel. Very, very good cricketers. And hopefully they're able to go on to bigger and better things and score a lot of runs for Warwickshire County Cricket Club, because that's what it's all about.
It most certainly is. And again, couldn't agree more with those choices. The Brooks brothers as well. We have got Super George Garrett.
God. What was I? I said to you I was missing a couple. Like, I faced Brooksy. So Henry Brooks I faced, I think, a couple of weeks ago prior I went to Bangladesh. I tell you now, he's looking good. I'm telling you. Because he had his injury. He had his quad last year. So unfortunately, he missed a bit of the season, most of the season. But I'm telling you now, I heard it here first. He is looking good. He is looking really, really good. Strong. Hitting the deck hard. And he's looking fit and firing. And I can't wait. Can't wait to see him bowl in the summer. Granted, standing at slip, I hope I hope when the Knicks come, it's a little bit warm, because I'm telling you now, facing them indoors, he's hitting the bat hard. Mate, how could I forget the two Brooks brothers? That's poor from me. There's too many, that's why. There's too many to name. So in answer to your question, the academy is looking good, and that's what you really want at a big club. There you go. And it's so exciting to see.
It is indeed. Andy, that has definitely, I'm guessing, answered the question. And yeah, it is incredible to see. It's a great blend of youth and experience, I think, at the club at the moment, and we are definitely going in the right direction. But Sam, I mean, for today's episode, of course, we will have to catch up again at some point for part two, the reunion, the part two Electric Boogaloo at some point, to have a catch up on those Twitter questions. But thank you to each and every single person who did send in questions. We have only got through a few on today's podcast, but I assure you, I make this promise now right here on the 1st of March, 2022, we will get a lot more of them answered. So Will Rhodes, James Thompson, and everyone else who sent in your questions, we will get them done at some point.
I'm not answering Rosie's question, because no? That's cop out, mate. I'm not happy with that.
We'll send in another question.
No, genuinely, yeah. Part two. I love a little part two, little Twitter question special, shall we say.
Absolutely.
Except Rosie's question. I'm not happy with Rosie's one, but I'll answer everyone else's. My skipper.
Well, we're hoping to get Will actually on the podcast at some point, so that's another little bit of an exclusive from today's episode.
Get Agent Lintott on the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get him on the phone. We'll hopefully get Brathwaite as well.
Jaylings on the case.
I love that nickname. I love it so much. But Sam, to be honest, I think that is a wonderful place to wrap up what has been a mammoth part one of the Counter Cricket podcast with yourself. Just before we wrap up, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
I'm going to be honest. No. Social media, I'm not very active, to be fair, apart from the odd try and be funny comment on Twitter. But apart from that, I guess my only resounding factor is I can't wait to do part two and answer any more questions that people may have. And just... not thanks, but you know, I appreciate all the love. To be fair, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a bit taken back from, you know, the questions that were asked. So I guess it shows that people are interested, you know, people invested in knowing a little bit more about me. So I'm more than happy to do a little part two. But I've had a lot of fun, to be fair, having a chat, somewhat going a little bit off path. But I guess you never really know where it's going to go on a podcast. So I've had a lot of fun. So hopefully, you know, the listeners are enjoyed as well. Hopefully there's some good things in there, and then, yeah, as I say, we'll do a part two somewhat soon.
Well, Sam, I think it goes without saying, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, to be honest. I knew you'd be good value. It was a long time coming, and you know the old adage, good things come to those who wait, and I feel like that has definitely become apparent in tonight's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. And yeah, part two, listeners, watch out for that one. I don't know when we're going to record it. We'll have to work it around.
My fee goes up. My fee goes up to 100 an hour.
Every episode.
it goes up. It's twofold. I mean, it goes up double. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. I'm full. This is there. I've had a lot of fun, to be fair. I won't hold you any longer, but I'm more than happy to do a part two. But I've really enjoyed the last, I don't even know how long.
2 hours.
Sorry.
Listeners. It's been a titanic episode, but again, Sam, I've loved every single moment, every single minute of tonight's recording. And yeah, part two, that is going to be something very, very special to look forward to indeed. But that is basically it from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.